Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
The following Packers Green 19 podcast is a production of JS Online and Packers News. Here are your hosts, Olivia Reiner and Tom Silverstein. Welcome everyone to the Packers News JS Online Green 19 podcast. I am not once again alongside Tom Silverstein. Instead, I am back with our lovely Packers beat reporter for the Green Bay Press Gazette, Ryan Wood. Ryan, welcome back.
How's it going? We're almost kind of like a NASCAR driver with all these names we've got, all these people we've got to shout out to. The yes, it is the Green 19, but it's the JS Online, Packers News and all that. So I feel like I just got done with a long drive.
You're good. Good. I know you're an Indianapolis boy.
That's right.
And you're a fan of the Indy 500. Are you an IndyCar fan in general?
Yeah, I grew up going to the 500. My dad most years took me, my brother, and a lot of fond memory. It's until you've seen that speedway, that track, it's impossible to put into justice just how gargantuan it is. It's if you can imagine looking at the turn from the outside, the turn looks like it's a straightaway. That's how big it is. That's how massive it is. It's almost like how the earth is flat, but is round, but it's so huge that it appears flat when you're standing on it. That's kind of like what IMS is.
Wow. Well, hopefully one day I'll have the opportunity to do so. But unfortunately, this is not an IndyCar podcast. This is a podcast about the Green Bay Packers. So
we veered there, didn't we? We took a left turn
and we've ended up now at Packers OTAs, which is where we are in the offseason schedule. Phase three of the offseason program. Next week is a very exciting part, I suppose, if there is a way for things to be exciting at least at this point in the offseason program. Next week is the mandatory mini camp. So all of these sessions so far, all of the OTAs have been voluntary. So attendance is not required, although I am sure it is certainly encouraged by the coaching staff. Next week, it is required on paper. That's because the attendance is enforced by penalty. If you do not show up, you will be fined. So the players that have been not in attendance, as we all know, Aaron Rodgers has not been in attendance at Packers OTAs or at any portion of the offseason program. In addition to that, the most veteran wide receivers on the team have also not been present at OTAs. So players like Davante Adams, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, Devin Funchess, Equanimeous St. Brown, and Alan Lazard have not been present at OTAs. I would think that changes next week, Ryan. What do you think?
I don't think there's any question. Yeah, it's mandatory next week. I think you're going to see 89 players there. We all know who the one player you're not likely to see there is. I don't think 12 showing up, but yeah, look, Davante Adams is skipping out on a $500,000 workout bonus this offseason. Everyone else, MVS, there is no workout bonus. He's on a rookie contract. Alan Lazard, he was a restricted free agent. Jair Alexander on the other side of the ball, not a receiver, but he hasn't been at the voluntary stuff. He's an all-pro on a rookie contract with no workout bonus. It's not surprising that these guys are not here. I wouldn't read anything into it, especially when Adrian Amos and Kenny Clark are asked, why are you here? And they say, duh, it's the money. They're getting paid. What is it for Kenny Clark? Like $600,000 workout bonus. I think it's $500,000 for Adrian Amos. When you have those lofty workout bonuses as part of your contract, there's a reason for it. It is to get you to show up to Green Bay in the summer when you don't really feel like being in Green Bay. The only person who's really skipping of the receivers, the only person really skipping any significant workout bonus is Davante Adams. The other guys don't have the workout bonus, so they're not here. I mean, I don't know that I'd look that much further into it than that.
And Davante Adams will be in line for a massive, massive contract at the end of this season, or even sooner. We'll see. But for some reason, I don't think $500,000 is really that difficult to forfeit for him at this point in his career. That's just my two cents, especially obviously Davante Adams is making the team. The only player that, Ryan, I know we discussed this yesterday, that we're kind of surprised hasn't been attending these OTAs is Equanimeous St. Brown, because we're not convinced that his spot on the roster is super cushy.
Yeah, it's a bit confident of a move from Equanimeous St. Brown. If they keep six receivers, which they could, then he could very well be the sixth receiver. But when you're the sixth receiver, you tend to show up to everything you can. And he's not here for voluntary stuff. So, I'm not here to say that EQ is not going to be on the team. He very well could be. That wouldn't be a surprise at all if he was. But he's a fringe guy. He's on that bubble. He's going to have to earn his spot. So it's always surprising when a guy has to earn their spots, not the voluntary stuff. You know, one point on Davante Adams, if it'll be very interesting to see if he's not here next week at minicamp. I imagine he will be. But if he's not, then you start to wonder, is this a message? Is he upset that he's not getting a contract extension yet? Because he is certainly in line for one. There's no question Davante Adams is in line for an extension. So his absence would be much more notable next week at the mandatory, just because of where he's at right now and at this stage in his career and being up for an extension. You've seen guys miss mandatory stuff to send a message that they are disgruntled that they have not gotten an extension. We don't know if that's the case with Davante Adams, but you begin to wonder if you don't see him next week at the mandatory.
I opened up the possibility for questions over on my Twitter account at Reiner Olivia, and asked you if you had anything on your mind out there regarding Packers OTAs. And we got quite a few responses specifically about the wide receivers. And Jesper asks, what does missing receivers mean to the evaluation of others? In some sort of theory, I guess. In theory, I think the Packers would like to have Aaron Rodgers start at quarterback in 2021. I don't think that comes as a surprise to many. However, if Aaron Rodgers is not at the helm of the Packers offense in 2021, one might assume that Jordan Love could be. And if Jordan Love isn't getting as many reps as he possibly can be, building that chemistry with the top receivers on the team, what is he doing? He's throwing to players right now in OTAs like Malik Taylor. Amari Rodgers, granted, is there. And he, although we've been throwing around the words top five receivers have been not at OTAs, Amari Rodgers is arguably within the top five. So he is there. But that being said, Love isn't throwing to players like Davante Adams or Marquez Valdes-Scantling. So what does the fact that these receivers have not been present at OTAs, what does that mean for Love's evaluation and even just in the larger context of the offense?
Yeah, there's no question that you see it show up. I mean, yesterday, Jordan Love threw an interception on a perfectly thrown ball to DeAndre Tompkins across the middle, open. He hit his check down, did everything you want the quarterback to do, put the ball right in his hands, and the ball went through his hands into Kavion Into's hands for the pick. That's not on Jordan Love. I mean, it looked exactly like most Aaron Rodgers interceptions, actually. When Aaron Rodgers throws an interception, usually it goes off his receiver's hands into the quarterback's hands. That's how he throws picks. That was an Aaron Rodgers interception that Jordan Love threw yesterday. And it's the type of interception that might not happen if he's not throwing to DeAndre Tompkins, right? I mean, if he's throwing to Davante Adams instead, you imagine that he'll catch that. So, yeah, there's no question it makes a difference. Matt LaFleur said that they are, at this stage in their offseason program, they are much more generalized in just getting the scheme down, getting the playbook, getting comfortable with that, which, if nothing else, Olivia, I think that Jordan Love's looked much more comfortable with the offense than he did last year. There's been more ownership of the offense. I think the fact that he's hitting the checkdowns at the rate that he is a good sign. It reminds me of what Aaron Rodgers did last year in his second year of the offense when he came in, and all of a sudden last offseason he was hitting checkdowns. We hadn't seen that in years. It's like, oh my goodness, he's hitting checkdowns now. And that was part of the offensive progression. It's what we're seeing from Jordan Love. Does that mean that he can throw into tight windows against the rush? No, we don't know that. But he's feeling – he looks good in the offense at this stage. So that's what Matt LaFleur said. He feels like it's more important to just get that feel down than having the right specific player in the exact right spot like you would in the fall when you're game planning for a specific opponent.
Matt LaFleur also mentioned that yesterday's practice was the first time that the team participated in a competitive period that wasn't 7-on-7. So they were doing an 11-on-11 period that had a true pass rush of some capacity. And let's be real here. OTA is there's no contact. There's no pads. They're in shorts. So it's still not a game-like scenario. However, it's inching closer to that. So yesterday we got to see Jordan Love under a little bit of pressure for the first time this offseason. And they're working out the kinks. It's going to take some time making true assessments of absolutely anyone. I think at this point in the offseason would be a disservice to that player. So come back to us in a few months. How about that?
Yeah, it'd be a disservice to us too. I try not to do that this time of year. I try not to make any bold proclamations because you just, like you said, Olivia, they're in shorts. You just don't know. And even if it was a competitive period, it's not that competitive in football when you're not in pads. So that's obviously a huge element to any competition that goes on the field.
So another, I suppose you could say, exciting update out of OTAs yesterday was the fact that we saw left tackle David Bakhtiari for the first time this offseason. Last week, we were able to see the second OTA that was open to the media, and Bakhtiari was not there. Yesterday, and I keep saying yesterday, I mean Wednesday, June 2nd, if you're listening to this in the future. Wednesday, June 2nd was the Packers' fifth OTA. David Bakhtiari was present. He was not practicing with the team. He was not participating in individual drills and team drills, anything of that nature. He was off to the side working with the rehab group, participating in rehab activities. And it was just, you know, it was good to see him out there. He's 5 months removed from an ACL injury. And we've seen over the last couple of OTA sessions, we've seen the Packers try to address this big question: who is going to start at left tackle for the Packers? And this week was a little bit of a different situation simply because Elgton Jenkins was not present at practice yesterday. He had been taking the first team reps at left tackle this past week. Now with Jenkins not there, no David Bakhtiari, who was going to start at left tackle in the first team reps in 11-on-11? And that would be guard Ben Braden. I don't know how much you know about Ben Braden, Ryan, but I had to do a little bit of digging regarding his Packers history. It's early. This does not necessarily mean Ben Braden is the guy. However, what does it say about the fact that he is repping with the ones in these early offseason workouts, even when when David Bakhtiari is out and Elgton Jenkins is out?
Well, it means that the Packers like him, right? I mean, there's something Ben Braden has done to curry favor with the coaching staff, and that bodes well for his potential to make the 53. I mean, if he's getting first team reps, he's on the radar, right? So, and he was getting some reps at guard as well, and he got some like secondary left tackle reps in the first open OTA session. Which was surprising to see because he's not listed as a tackle. Look, not what you want. You don't want Ben Braden to be your starting left tackle this fall, no question about it. So I think it says more about the fact that he's on the radar for the 53 than it does any positive developments for that left tackle spot. David Bakhtiari looked like he was moving around pretty well on that knee in the rehab. That's not to say that he'll be the starter week one. It's so long to go. Matt LaFleur did say that he's ahead of schedule a little bit, but he acknowledged in his very next breath that there's a long way to go. I'm fairly confident in two things with David Bakhtiari. He's going to start training camp on the PUP, and he's not going to end training camp on the PUP. Because if you end training camp on the PUP, you got to sit the first 6 weeks, and I would imagine the Packers, if nothing else, want the option of playing him in the first 6 weeks instead of just writing that off completely. So that would be my best guess, that he starts on the PUP. He doesn't end on the PUP, makes the initial 53. No idea if he's going to be ready week one, week two, week three. No clue when that is, but at least that gives you the option to play him as soon as his knee is ready.
Until then, we'll see exactly what the Packers decide to do. Elgton Jenkins, as I mentioned, took the first team reps last week when he was at OTAs. This week, Ben Braden. So we know that the Packers like Ben Braden simply because they brought him back to the practice squad after cutting him in 2019. They brought him back right after David Bakhtiari sustained a chest injury, actually, against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in week six. They had him signed to the active roster against the Houston Texans that following week. Then they ended up waiving him and he reverted back to the practice squad. And then they elevated him three more times before finally signing him to the active roster again, January 2nd, ahead of the Bears game. So if they are bringing him up multiple times, clearly they have some affinity for him, and we'll see if he manages to secure a spot on the 53-man roster come the end of training camp. So that's the offensive line updates. One other thing I will note. So after Ben Braden was done taking the initial first team reps at left tackle, he moved back over to right guard, which is where I believe he was taking reps last week. And Billy Turner moved over to left tackle. So they're also trying Billy Turner at both right tackle and left tackle. And Royce Newman got some reps, the rookie, at right tackle too, after those initial first team reps. So something to keep an eye on again early, but clearly they think highly of Royce Newman as a versatile offensive lineman, as someone who has the ability to play both guard and tackle. And right now he's getting some opportunities to tackle just because of the lack of depth, if you will, or at least lack of starters. Maybe that's a better way to put it, on the offensive line, especially at tackle.
I think Royce Newman has a chance too. He's got an opportunity. He's a fourth round pick. Ideally, you wouldn't start two rookies on the offensive line, and Josh Myers, the second rounder, is absolutely going to be the starting center. So two rookies on the offensive line, it's not ideal, but he's a fourth round pick. David Bakhtiari is a rookie starting left tackle as a fourth round pick. It's not outside the realm of possibility for a guy like that to be a starter week one if you got some injury situations. And you know, you could, if they really want to keep Elgton Jenkins at left guard, which I think is still something to consider, then a lot of that depends on does Royce Newman play well enough to earn a starting right tackle spot, and then you move Billy Turner to left tackle. So that's one possibility. The other possibility, obviously, is Elgton Jenkins at left tackle, John Runyon Jr. at left guard, Billy Turner at right tackle. I think those are your two most likely scenarios, but they're going to give it multiple looks to see what their best combination of five is.
Let's continue this conversation about the offense before we transition into the defense. Just based on our questions that we got over on Twitter, I wanted to transition this way. So we discussed some of the players that did show up for OTAs because of money motivations. And we discussed some of the players that didn't, workout bonuses and whatnot. One of the players I think you and I were both surprised that showed up was Mercedes Lewis, the tight end, who I believe has a $50,000 workout bonus incentive to attend the offseason program in Green Bay. $50,000 to Mercedes Lewis, probably not a ton of money, but the fact that he was there is got to be pretty cool for the tight end's room. I'm sure those guys were really excited to see him there.
That almost knocked me over when I saw that he showed up to voluntary offseason work when the quarterback is not here. He's in his 16th year, right? So like Mercedes Lewis, he's earned a good amount of money playing football over the course of the first 15 seasons. I don't know what his career earnings are off the top of my head, but he's a wealthy man. $50,000. It almost bowled me over, Olivia. I couldn't believe that he showed up. But hey, more credit to him. I mean that is the definition of kudos. Mercedes Lewis showing up to OTAs for $50,000 is mad kudos there.
Good for him. Let's talk about the tight ends room right now, because as it is, there's a lot of, I guess, question marks. Maybe I would say the tight ends room there houses the players, some of the players I'm most excited to see this upcoming year, especially as it concerns Jay Sternberger and Josiah DeGuara. Sternberger has had a couple of kind of lousy years from injuries and COVID last year. I think he just wasn't able to find the field as often as he would have liked to. He's only played 18 games between his two seasons in the NFL. And then Josiah DeGuara, of course, a really early ACL tear that kept him out of the entire season last year. So eager to see how those two perform in 2021. That being said, right off the bat there, you've got Robert Tonyan, Mercedes Lewis, Jay Sternberger, Josiah DeGuara are more or less locks, I would say, to make the roster. Maybe Jay Sternberger is a bigger question mark than DeGuara is. But then you've got an interesting player in Dominique Daphne, who came in late in the season and was able to work his way from being a special teams player primarily to getting offensive snaps to catching his first touchdown on his second catch in the NFL against the Chicago Bears last season on the road. So Ryan on Twitter wants to know, do you think that the Packers find a way to keep Daphne on the roster? Is it unrealistic to think that the Packers would accommodate 5 tight ends on their roster in 2021?
That's a good question, and an even better name, Ryan. I think that Dominique Daphne is the reason why Jay Sternberger is not a lock, because that's the competition right there. I think your other three are pretty close. I mean, they're, you know, Tonyan is obviously a lock. DeGuara is a good bet. And Mercedes Lewis, if he's not a lock, is at least a good bet. I think that fourth tight end competition is going to be very interesting. Could they keep 5? Yes, they could, but I just, it's hard to excuse the positional value of keeping 5 tight ends. There's some special teams value there, but in Jay Sternberger and Dominique Daphne, you got two guys who are awfully similar. I mean, Dominique Daphne has maybe been a little bit more in the backfield than we saw Jay Sternberger, but we saw Jay Sternberger at H-back and lead blocker in his rookie season. We saw him kind of do everything, just like we saw Dominique Daphne. So those guys overlap enough on offense. I don't know that's likely you're going to see both. It's not impossible, but I don't think it's likely.
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm really curious to see how training camp shakes out, how Jay Sternberger performs in training camp, because remember, we didn't really get to see much of Jay Sternberger in training camp last year because he came in and tested positive for COVID, at least in the very initial intake process. So very curious to find out how that all shakes out with the tight end. So let's move over to the defense now and talk a little bit about them. We've got some questions as it relates to the defense. I wanted to start with Matt on Twitter. Is there anything you can tell by observing so far that highlights the new defensive scheme? Ryan, we were talking a little bit before we started here, and the defense, listen, again, it's hard to really make a lot of sweeping definitive conclusions about anything at this point in the offseason. However, the defense looks a lot like the defense that we know and love under Mike Pettine over the last several years. So I'm curious if you've noticed anything strikingly different or noteworthy as it relates to the defense in these last two OTAs.
Not really. They've been pretty clear. Matt LaFleur has said over and over again that schematically, it's not that big of a difference. I mean, it's many, many ways the same type of scheme that they're bringing in. I mean, they're still going to be 3-4. They're still base nickel, basically, with 5 defensive backs on the field. You want to primarily see them in that. They were using mostly 2 true inside linebackers yesterday, which is obviously different than what Mike Pettine did when he kind of had that third safety drop in the box as a sub linebacker. But it really, if you go back to this point in the calendar year with Mike Pettine, you were also seeing mostly 2 true inside linebackers. This is kind of their base nickel, and then they build off of that. So there hasn't, schematically, there hasn't been that many differences. It's going to be very similar in scheme. The difference is going to be how it's communicated, how it's coached, maybe the rapport between Joe Barry and Matt LaFleur, those things, how the staff is led. Those are going to be the differences, and those are significant differences. But what you see on the field schematically, not expected to be a major difference.
Speaking of the inside linebackers, let's talk about them. Yesterday, we got to see a little bit more of Ty Summers taking reps with Chris Barnes as that number one inside linebacker pair. We didn't get to see as much of Kamal Martin as we did last week when OTAs were last open to the media. Christopher wants to know if we can talk about Ty Summers and how he's looked so far. You know, he's been on the team for a couple of years and has primarily supported the team in a special teams role. However, I'm curious to know too, could he have an opportunity to see more defensive snaps? Could Oren Burks have an opportunity to see more defensive snaps now that he's back in the inside linebackers room after spending some time with the outside linebackers last season?
Well, those two guys right there, Ty Summers and Oren Burks, they might be your two top special teams players. I know Oren Burks led the special teams unit last year with 335 reps, and Ty Summers was second with 327. So that's where their roles start. You know, they are core special team guys, and then from there, you know, Ty Summers got almost 200 snaps last year, about 100 more than Oren Burks. So he's had some opportunities defensively. I remember he came in, what was it, week three, when Christian Kirksey went out in New Orleans last year, and he played, I think, 75% of the snaps. Then the next week played about the same. So in injury situations, he's been the guy. Both of them are still behind Chris Barnes and Kamal Martin. That's the way it's going to be. But the fact that you saw Ty Summers rotating in yesterday, I mean, he's going to be – right now he's part of the rotation. We don't know if he's going to be part of the rotation in the fall, but right now he is. Either way, both those guys are likely to make the 53, and both those guys are likely to be primary special teams players. That's going to be their primary role and function on this roster.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Should be definitely a position to keep an eye on. I'm eager to see how Chris Barnes and Kamal Martin do and seeing if they can keep their spots as the top guys, but really some good value there for the Packers with Barnes being an undrafted free agent, Kamal Martin being a fifth round pick last year. And clearly the Packers felt good enough about the room that they were able to let Christian Kirksey walk. Let's talk about the cornerbacks quickly. I wanted to discuss Kevin King because I don't believe we saw much of him last week. He wasn't fully participating in practice. And today, yesterday, we got to see a little bit more of him in the team drills. That's correct, right, Ryan? He wasn't participating.
Yeah, he was inside the Don Hutson almost the entire time. You know, what's funny, Olivia, is that we were standing. We help each other out with attendance because, let's face it, 90 names is a lot to check off. We've gotten really, like, if you want to know, like, what's kind of a weird beat writing skill that you wouldn't think of, checking off names very quickly, like a teacher in class, that is a beat writing skill that you acquire. We just go down 90 names and boom, we help each other. And I remember it was during that process, the first open OTA session that we were kind of, you know, comparing notes, and I'm like, well, I've got 20 checked off. And like, I don't see him out there. And then I didn't see him out there. And I was really confused. I was like, I swear I saw number 20. Like, I swear I did. Where is he? Well, he was out there at the start, and then he spent the rest of the practice inside the Don Hutson. So yes, Wednesday was the first time that we got to see him this offseason. Went through everything and he looked fine. He did go into the Don Hutson at some point. And said hello to us, by the way. He trudged right by us and said, what's up, fellas? But I don't know why. But, yeah, he got through most of the practice, and he looked fine.
And we've also got to see a little bit more of Eric Stokes, too. And both he and Kevin King were starting alongside each other. I believe Josh Jackson was also starting ahead of Eric Stokes in the beginning.
He was. Briefly, yeah. Only a couple snaps. Or reps.
Right. Yeah. So I'm curious, Ryan, Have you noticed anything interesting about Eric Stokes? We heard so much about his speed coming out of the draft, 4.25 40 at his pro day. Is there anything that you've noticed out of Eric Stokes' game that Packers fans could be excited about?
Well, it's interesting that he's 4.25 speed and he's at a position that doesn't really showcase that speed, right? Because he's not offense. He's not running at breakneck speed whenever he's got the ball like he would if he was a receiver or if he was a running back, which he played in high school. A little shameless plug, we'll be having an Eric Stokes story in a matter of the next few days on Packers News. I talked to a bunch of his coaches and primarily about that speed, because what's fascinating about Eric Stokes, anyone that has ever coached Eric Stokes or knows Eric Stokes, it's the first thing they talk about. That speed, it is stupid speed. I mean, it is just insane speed. I talked with one of his defensive coordinators, his high school defense coordinator, and he said that the 4.25 that he ran, it was almost like disappointing that he only ran 4.25. The combine record is John Ross 4.22, and John Ross then went on to be the 9th overall pick by the Cincinnati Bengals. And the people that know Eric Stokes, his coach, they were convinced that obviously they didn't have the combine, but they were convinced that he was going to break the combine record. And Nathan Noble, his defensive coordinator from high school, he told me he really does believe that he can run sub 4.20. He's like, I'm biased, but I've seen, like, he can run sub 4.20. So, like, that's how fast Eric Stokes is. It's not just that he runs a 4.25. It's that he runs a 4.25, and it's somehow still a little disappointing. Like, oh, he only ran 4.25. Like, that's his kind of speed. I think, Olivia, it's going to be very interesting to see how they get their top three corners on the field, because you look at it. One, how long does it take Eric Stokes to develop, right? It's not enough just to be fast. But two, you got two really similar builds in Kevin King and Eric Stokes. Because the other thing you notice about Eric Stokes is he's very tall and long, just like Kevin King. And then you got Jaire Alexander, who obviously is undersized, but as hard-nosed of a corner as you could ask for. Also really, really gifted speed. How they get those guys on the field together is going to be very interesting.
I'm curious to see how it shakes out. And hopefully next week, when Jaire Alexander is supposed to return for mandatory minicamp, we'll get a better sense of what they're thinking, where they want to put Stokes, who's going to be taking the first team reps. These are all great questions, and hopefully we'll have some more answers for you next week. Ryan, anything else OTAs related? We didn't really get into anything Aaron Rodgers related this episode, although I'm not quite sure there's anything else to say about Aaron Rodgers right now.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. Robert Tonyan said that he'd spoken with Aaron Rodgers recently. He was asked, and he said, he's my friend. I checked up on my friend. And that was basically all he had to say. So we know that Aaron Rodgers has been in recent communication with players on this team. He's been in communication with people inside this locker room. Honestly, we also know that Mark Murphy, Brian Gutekunst, and Matt LaFleur each went out individually to speak with him. Those were, in a lot of ways, those kind of feel like wasted trips, right? Because if Aaron Rodgers is going to return, it ain't going to be Mark Murphy. It's not going to be Brian Gutekunst. We know that. And it's not going to be Matt LaFleur either. If he's going to return, it's going to be the relationships that he has inside that locker room. And the fact that he is still contacting and in connection with players inside that locker room, maybe it's not surprising, because like Robert Tonyan said, he is his friend. Like, he just misses his friend. But it's at least a promising sign, I would think. I mean, I don't want to make too much out of it, but it's not nothing. It's not like he shunned the entire roster. I mean, there are still relationships here in Green Bay, friendships here in Green Bay, and there's been communication.
Yeah, I don't think I'm too surprised by that. I think they've been pretty clear when Robert spoke, when we heard from players last week speak, they understand that this is a business, and sometimes this happens. There's going to be, I would be more shocked if a player said, I agree with absolutely everything the front office does. Like,
yeah.
That just doesn't happen. But unfortunately, it's, I guess not unfortunately, it is what it is. It's that the front office is is at the top, and the players are employees of the team, and so is the front office too. But the power dynamic is the power dynamic. And I think Rodgers is trying to flip that on its head a little bit. But I don't think that it comes as a surprise that he doesn't hate his teammates. I think we know that his teammates have a lot of respect for him.
And Rodgers is one of the few in the entire league that has the potential to flip that power dynamic on its head a little bit. Because let's be real here. Every time there's CBA negotiations, the NFLPA gets railroaded. The owners win. That's the power landscape in this league. Rodgers is one of the very few that has that potential. So I know, Olivia, that when this whole thing first started, one of the questions that was being asked was, how does that sit with the locker room? How do you walk back this situation with the locker room? Not an issue at all. There's going to be nothing that he has to walk back. There are 89 other guys on this roster right now that are applauding the quarterback and what he's standing for, because yeah, they very much feel like he's standing for them. He's one of them. He's a player. So I don't see that being an issue at all. And yeah, it's like you said, not surprising that he's communicating with friendship that he has on the team. That'll continue whether he's here or not. But you know, that to me, that's the avenue, that's the portal for him to return. It's through the players and the relationships inside that locker room, and only through that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see how this continues to play out. June 1st has come and gone. The next date, I suppose, that is circled on the calendar is June 8th, which is the first day of mandatory minicamp. Although, as we already discussed, it's a $93,000 max fine. Aaron Rodgers could totally blow that off and be like, you know, look ahead to training camp when the more serious fines will start to set in if he does decide to skip. So we'll see how it all shakes out. But the Packers have not yet traded Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers cannot trade himself. And the Packers have shown no indication that they have any interest in trading Aaron Rodgers. They've been very transparent about where they stand. So right now, as you mentioned, Ryan, it's a very long staring contest, as you said yesterday on the live stream. So cool. Anything else we wanted to hit on before we wrap things up today?
I think we hit on it.
Awesome.
Good job, Olivia. Olivia is responsible for the rundowns. She does a good job.
Well, thank all of you, seriously, for the questions. I'm always intrigued to know what all of you are thinking out there. So if you ever have questions, feel free to email me, tweet me, do whatever, carrier pigeon, I don't really care. Love to take a pulse on what you're all thinking out there. So kudos
carrier pigeon.
All of the
we're getting old school there.
Yeah, listen, if you have one, if you know how to operate one, a drone. Actually,
can you do that? Yes. If you have a carrier pigeon, please get us a question via carrier pigeon. Send it to Lambeau Field. We're usually there. And let's, I just want to see how that works.
A carrier seagull may be more effective because there are lots of seagulls around Lambeau Field. I've always been really intrigued by the seagull population at Lambeau. Have you noticed just the crazy numbers of seagulls?
That's not just a Lambeau thing. That's a Green Bay thing. Yeah, they're everywhere. True. They're everywhere. That and the geese. I don't know if you ever go to the Fox River Trail, Olivia, but those geese, oh my goodness. And they don't like humans.
Oh no.
Like running by the geese, they will hiss at you. And leave I'm kind of alone. In the zone. I'm in the zone of like, you know, I'm you know, and all of a sudden you're just hearing like a bird hiss at you. It's like, what? That takes some getting used to.
Leave them alone. Leave the wildlife alone.
Don't touch the geese. Don't touch the geese. They're not friendly.
Your life lesson of the day. All right, that's going to do it for us today, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. We will be back next week to chat about the mandatory minicamp. Make sure you're subscribed to our podcast wherever you are currently listening to your podcast. For Ryan Wood, I am Olivia Reiner. We will talk to you next time.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.